Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. We begin on the front page with Local Businesses Opening, Closing, Moving in 2026 by Olivia Jacobs. 2026 is already shaping up to be a big year for businesses in Bloomington Normal and beyond. Here's a look at businesses that have already opened, are expected to open, have closed, or are otherwise on the move so far this year. If you know any we missed, contact ojacobs at pantograph.com to add it online. Openings. Annie's Eats and Catering. Owners Annie and Kenny Clem are moving to their new spot at 801 South Main Street in Bloomington, the former location of Winners and various other businesses. Bob Evans. The former Bob Evans at 2115 West Market Street in Bloomington has been purchased by the Cantola family, who also own Fiesta Ranchera. They have plans to open a new restaurant there in 2026, but what it will be has not been announced. The Western Wear store at 1700 East College Avenue in Normal opened last fall and held a grand opening last weekend of January. It's Root Barn. Craftify DIY Studio, Eric and Minzy Chen's craft studio, is now open at 401 North Veterans Parkway, Suite 6 in Bloomington, offering a space for kids to be creative and have birthday parties and other events. Their grand opening was on January 22nd. Crawdaddy's Pizza Parlor, owned by Bob Crawford and the owner of Crawford's Corner Pub at 610 West Chestnut Street in Bloomington, is planning to open a pizza restaurant sometime this year. An exact timeline has not been announced. The Japanese home goods store, Daiso, at 1700 East College Avenue in Normal, officially debuted with a grand opening event on January 24th and 5th. Divine Barrel is the second business that is planned to open inside the Chateau at 1621 Jumer Drive in Bloomington. Divine Barrel has been described as an award-winning brewery based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Scramblers opened the hotel January 8th. Dutch Bros Coffee, the Arizona-based coffee franchise, is planned at the former site of Bandana's Barbecue at 502 IAA Drive. Construction is already underway, but an opening date has yet to be announced. A second tenant is also planned to join them at the site, but details have not been released. Eric and Minzy Chen are also partnering with the former owners of Ching's and opening a Korean fried chicken restaurant that will offer corn dogs, bubble waffles, and more. Kobe Eon is expected to open in April at 1101 North Main Street in Normal. Lab Coffee, Abby and Adam Gantus, owners of the Yoga Lab and Lab Coffee, are expected to open a third location at 210 West Mulberry Street in Normal as part of a partnership with ISU's Encounter Campus Ministry. They broke ground this past October and are expecting to open sometime this summer ahead of the school year. The Bloomington-based food truck serving authentic African cuisine named Mason P&J is expected to open sometime this year. The Resale Sporting Goods store at 105 Krispy Kreme Drive, Suite 2 in Bloomington, held a grand opening January 22nd through the 25th. The store is owned by Christy and Clayton Sierkowski, managed by their son, Levi Smaling. Pop-up chicken owner Aaron Francis is also working on bringing an elevated deli restaurant to the former KFC on Prospect Road in Bloomington. He expects to open in the first quarter of 2026, but a name has not been announced. The independent Jimmy John's franchise, owned by Jerome Hranka and Mark Largent, is expected to open its headquarters location in the former Clay Dooley Building at 307 East Grove Street in Bloomington. The brunch franchise, Scramblers, opened on January 8th at 1607 Jumer Drive inside the Chateau Hotel and Conference Center in Bloomington. Divine Barrel Brewery is expected to open in the hotel. Sharks Fish and Chicken, the locally owned franchise, started in Decatur in 2019 and opened in Bloomington at 711 East Washington Street on Monday, February 23rd. And the 8-Bit Arcade, the Beercade, owned by Jason Pacey, is expected to return to downtown Bloomington this year at 217 West Jefferson Street. An opening date has not been announced. Three closures were noted. The Hudson-based Lake Road Inn in Bloomington, a Bloomington business, was owned by Craig Hansen and unexpectedly closed at the beginning of the year after he died in December. The spot was originally opened in 1934 as Gus Belt's Lake Road Inn. Sixth-generation owners Ken and Becky Rupp announced the farm and cheese shop would close permanently on February 7th after they had owned the business Rupp Jersey Cheese over the last 20-plus years. And owner Susie Todd announced at the beginning of January the bakery Sugar Mama Bakery at 109 West Jefferson Street in downtown Bloomington was closing after nearly 15 years in business. Next, we'll turn to Officers Building Trust. Black police officers in Bloomington Normal seek to be positive role models, by Caitlin Klepek. In recent years, police brutality and excessive use of force against people of color have been in the spotlight across the country. But in Bloomington Normal, black officers say they intend to change those perceptions locally. Coming in, not being open-minded, and having a hatred towards a specific race of people, that is not tolerated. We can't tolerate it, said Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington. Use of force data shows the relationship between law enforcement and the communities they serve has become increasingly tumultuous. According to the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, quote, although approximately 1,000 civilians in the U.S. are killed by police officers each year, black men are 2.5 times more likely than their white counterparts to die at the hands of an officer, close quote. This disproportionate rate of police violence is often at the center of discussions of race in law enforcement and has been seen as a deterrent, discouraging black Americans and other minorities from becoming police officers. But in February, black officers in Bloomington and Normal marked Black History Month by discussing their experiences in law enforcement and their efforts to build bridges. It's a notable profession, said Symington, Bloomington's second black police chief. So when we make these mistakes, and mistakes have been made in society, they not only affect those communities where it occurred, it spreads throughout the nation. In both Bloomington and Normal, the police chiefs said they have participated in initiatives to recruit more minority officers in an effort to build departments that are more reflective of the community. The Normal Police Department is committed to recruiting, developing, and retaining a diverse workforce that is reflective of the community we serve, said Normal Police Chief Steve Petrelli, who is white. Bloomington officials agreed. We signed on with the 10 shared principles with the NAACP, and one of the principles says they're supposed to help us recruit minority officers, Symington said. The Bloomington chief said he hopes to bring more focus to the NAACP principle, prioritizing the recruitment of minority officers, and engage with other minority groups in the community as well. The Bloomington Police Department currently employs 7 black officers, which is 5% of the total sworn staff. The Normal Police Department has 10 black officers, which is 10.9% of the total sworn staff, Public Information Officer Brad Park told the Pantograph. According to the 2020 census, about 9% of the Bloomington Normal metro area identified as black or African American. At both departments, the chief said they only allow the best of the best officers to come in. Although both chiefs said their departments do not have a history with racial prejudice, they said if a problem arises, it will be handled. We're in a fantastic point in history in law enforcement. There are high levels of accountability that are baked into what we do. Our mission, our values, all of those things speak to doing the right thing. It is imperative that we be the gatekeepers, Symington said. Petrelli added, Black History Month serves as an opportunity to recognize the profound contributions Black Americans have made to this nation, the Normal Police Department, and the policing profession. Some of the Black officers in Bloomington Normal said they often are judged for their decision to join law enforcement. But their goals in choosing this career were to better the community, to serve and protect, and to provide a good example for young kids to look up to, they said. Isaiah Williamson, a Normal Police School resource officer for McLean County Unit 5, said he had a challenging upbringing, including abuse, trauma, foster care, and eventually being kicked out of his adopted home. "My story is not normal, right? Like, it's not something that everybody has been through. The people that I've met, they help me realize I can use my story to help people," Williamson said. Normal police officer Deontu Armstrong said he could never see himself doing anything other than police work. As a protector of his family, he said he wanted to inspire kids who had a similar upbringing to him. "No matter what your circumstances are, what you've experienced in your life as a younger child, whether that be bad things, you can still be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it," Armstrong said. Detective Trey Jones, who works for the Bloomington Police Department, grew up in what he described as a public service household with parents who were social workers. He said he always wanted to help people and thought police work was the most exciting way to do it. Williamson said, although he has experienced both positive and negative interactions with law enforcement, the common thread he identified as a child was that the police he encountered were there for one reason, to help him out of a bad situation. "Things might get pretty bad, but you can come out the other side of it and still move on and move forward," Williamson said. The resource officer said he was joined law enforcement because he believes in his career. He is able to help people and provide an example for others who had difficult upbringings. The officers acknowledge they often encounter members of the public on one of the worst days of their lives, which can lead to a negative perception of the interaction. Before coming to Bloomington, Jones worked at the Chicago Police Department, and serving in those two departments, he learned some people do not like police no matter where they live, he said. But in Bloomington, being in a smaller community allows officers to hear more of the positive and have more intentional interactions with the public, Jones said. Armstrong said he has had firsthand experience being on the other side of policing with family members who had a negative outlook of the police. This led him to want to change the narrative. "I know there's a divide between the African American community and policing, just because there's a bad history there," he said. "But I wanted to shed light and show a different side of that." Jones said he believes all officers face the same struggles and challenges, but whatever makes you stand out will be the thing those who don't like police officers will use as ammunition, including race. Armstrong also spoke to his experience as a Black officer hearing negative reactions from the Black community. "From being a Black officer to being an authoritative figure to African American people, you get looped into, 'Oh, you're one of them,' and then they say things at you," he said. "I just tried to be a voice of reason." Williamson, who has spent 12 years with the Normal Police Department, said as a police officer he's been called a traitor, an Uncle Tom, a disparaging term used in Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, used to describe a Black person who is eager to win the approval of white people. Jones also said the underlying tension between police and the public remains, but he does not let that tension hinder him. "What makes a good police officer is you deal with the uncontrollable and then focus on what you can control," Jones said. The Normal officers made similar statements, and they all agreed that police work was still worth it, and police administrators in both communities agreed. "It's not an us versus them. We're truly a fabric, part of a community, right? The police are the community, and the community are the police. In an effort to build upon a trust, we have a consistent basis," Symington said. Jerry Vogler with the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission has written The Veterans Corner. The VA Home Loan Guarantee Program recently reached a milestone of granting the 29 millionth VA guaranteed home loan to veterans, service members, and surviving spouses who served and sacrificed on behalf of our grateful nation. Generally, the VA Home Loan Program does not require the veteran to make a down payment, and the program never requires monthly mortgage insurance. A funding fee is a one-time payment that the veteran, service member, or survivor pays on a VA-backed or VA direct home loan. VA also grants exemptions to the funding fee for those who receive VA compensation for their service-connected disabilities and Purple Heart recipients still serving on active duty. This year, veterans, service members, and their surviving spouses can deduct VA funding fees on their taxes when purchasing a home using the VA Guaranteed Home Loan. A funding fee often ranges from 0.5% to 3.3%, depending on the loan type, amount, down payment amount, and whether the veteran is a first-time user of the program. If you are looking for a great deal on financing a home, try the VA Home Loan Guarantee at benefits.va.gov/homeloans. The VA recently changed its policy concerning survivors' benefits claims to ensure that VA provides the most beneficial outcome for surviving spouses and children. The final rule clarifies that a surviving spouse or child claimant for either survivor's pension or dependency and indemnity compensation, or DIC, is entitled to the greater benefit. Previously, VA was required to address claims for dependency and indemnity compensation and survivor's pension separately, resulting in longer claims processes as a formal decision was required for both benefits. Effective February 23rd, the VA will pay the higher of the two benefits, which is generally DIC, without delaying the process to develop the lesser benefit. This common sense change streamlines the survivor's claim process, reduces administrative burdens, and delivers quicker decisions to beneficiaries during challenging times. DIC is a tax-free monthly monetary benefit paid to eligible surviving spouses, children, and parents of a service member who died in the line of duty, or a veteran who dies from service-connected injuries or illnesses. Survivor's pension offers tax-free monthly payments to qualified surviving spouses and unmarried dependent children of wartime veterans who meet certain income and net worth limits set by Congress. The U.S. President has awarded more than 3,500 Medals of Honor to our nation's bravest soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guard members since the award's creation in 1861. We honor these brave members of the military with lifelong benefits as follows. A special MOH is $5,780 monthly tax-free pension above whatever other benefits for which they may qualify. Special Space A air transportation, commissary and PX privileges, access to morale, welfare, and recreation programs, and base lodging facilities. Priority 1 VA claims handling, a 10% increase in their retired pay, no VA medical co-pays, Medal of Honor flag, may wear the uniform at any time as long as the standard restrictions are observed, interment at Arlington National Cemetery, if not already eligible, and invitations to many high-level events, including inaugurations and special events at national cemeteries. You can browse Medal of Honor Benefits for Life for more information. For the first time since May 2020, the backlog of VA disability compensation and pension benefit claims is below 100,000. A VA claim for compensation or pension is considered backlogged once it has been pending in the claims inventory for more than 125 days. In 2013, 70% of claims were older than 120 days, the most ever compared to just 17% today. Claims can be complex to develop. Do not develop your own claim nor pay someone to develop your claim until at least after you visit with a certified Veterans Service Officer, and then be patient with the journey. And the quote of the day, the 126th Olympic Winter Games are gone. What a spectacular 2 weeks. Gold, silver, and bronze medals are everywhere. Over 206 teams and some individual competitors put on a show for the entire world to see and enjoy. All the countries had athletes and supporters and fans who beamed with pride when their contestants won a medal. But above even the disappointment of not winning, a bright light of patriotism and pride for their country and respect for others shone over the entire games. What if that patriotism and international respect could be bottled and consumed every day? Theodore Roosevelt said, quote, "I am an American, free born and free bred, where I acknowledge no man as my superior except for his own worth, or as my inferior except for his own demerit." In state news, we have transit money sparks backlash. Downstate officials unhappy that road funding diverted, by Jacques Abu Rizk and Amy L. Wong with the Medill, Illinois News Bureau. Sorry about that. I've never seen that before. In Dallas City, a small town in western Illinois along the Mississippi River, Mayor Kevin Six says residents have grown frustrated, wondering whether the state will ever finish paving Illinois Highway 96. "They just paved 6 miles between our town and the next, but we've been waiting 4-5 years for more of it to be repaved," he said. "They're just dragging their feet." The Illinois Department of Transportation included $7 million for 6 miles of resurfacing and culvert work on Illinois 96 in its October multi-year plan. The years of the project are listed for 2027 to 2031. Six said his frustrations only intensified following the veto session of the General Assembly last fall and passage of a transit bill that diverted funds traditionally used for road construction throughout the state and put them toward public transportation, mostly in the Chicago area. Downstate officials have aired frustration in the aftermath of the transit overhaul, though the Illinois Department of Transportation maintains that its multi-year plan, unveiled prior to the new law's passage, will not be reduced or altered because of it. Senate Bill 2111, which passed in the final hours of the last day of the session, included a $1.5 billion in transit funding. That includes redirecting a projected $860 million in sales tax revenue charged on motor fuels from the Illinois Road Fund to public transportation operations. The bill, which will take effect in June, distributes 85% of the diverted funds to the Chicago area transit and just 15% to downstate transit agencies. The Road Fund is a primary statewide account used to pay for or finance road projects through the Illinois Department of Transportation. Many road projects are paid for with construction bonds, and the state's motor fuel tax increases with inflation each year to raise revenue to pay for them. The road fund is fed into by the state's motor fuel tax, which is separate from the sales tax charged on motor fuel taxes. Before 2019's Rebuild Illinois Capital Infrastructure Plan, the sales tax on motor fuel was going to the state's main general revenue fund rather than to the road fund. Rebuild, which was the first comprehensive multi-year capital plan since 2009, created an incremental shift of that money to the road fund, which the new law will alter. Pritzker received bipartisan support for the plan in large part because it shifted the sales tax money on motor fuel purchases to the road fund. The new law also allows another estimated $200 million from interest growing in the state's road fund to be allocated for mass transit. That money will patch public transportation budget holes in the northern part of the state caused in large part by pandemic-era federal aid running dry. Pritzker signed Senate Bill 2111 on December 16th. The plan does not include any statewide tax increases, but raises sales tax in the Chicago area. The governor defended the redistribution of transportation funding shortly after his signing. "We have to put more money into downstate roads than we have in the Chicago. I'm sorry, we have put more money into downstate roads than we have in the Chicago area roads, much more than historically. That's just been the way it is since we passed Rebuild Illinois," Pritzker said. We definitely are looking at ways that we can turn the dials and make it better for downstate, but I think we've done a lot already. The state's latest $50.6 billion infrastructure plan expands on the 2019 Rebuild Illinois Capital Program. For fiscal year 2026 to 2031, Rebuild Illinois allocates $11.4 billion to projects specific to downstate IDOT districts 4 through 9. Projects for districts 1 through 3 are slated to receive $12.3 billion for the same time, according to IDOT. Region 1 includes the state's six most populous counties that make up two-thirds of the state's population: Cook, DuPage, Lake, Will, Kane, and McHenry. Districts 2 and 3 include 19 counties ranging from the state's northwest corner south to Ford and Iroquois County. Responding to concerns about how downstate road projects will be affected, a spokesperson for the Illinois Department of Transportation said, quote, "No changes or reductions to the program are planned. The department remains committed and has the resources to deliver all of the projects captured in the latest multi-year construction program released last fall, covering fiscal years 2026 through 2031. Close quote. The spokesperson was Maria Castaneda. The new law doesn't explicitly divert funding from projects earmarked for central or southern Illinois. Rather, it pulls from the statewide funding pool that backs IDOT's multi-year plan and directs the money to the 85-15 transit split on an ongoing basis. Senator Ram Vilivalam, Democrat from Chicago, a main proponent of the bill, argued it provides sufficient funding for downstate, pointing to the 15% of redirected funds, or $129 million, for transit outside the Chicago area. But six and several Republican legislators, including Senator Sue Reason, a Republican from Morris, said Springfield has continuously sidestepped downstate road infrastructure in favor of Chicago. That's peanuts compared to what they took from us and gave to Chicago, Reason said. And what really makes me frustrated is the people still in my district, when they go up to gas up in my district, think that that money is going to repair their roads and bridges. While a 2016 constitutional amendment approved by voters explicitly allows road fund money to be used for public transit and several other modes of transportation, Senator Dave Siverson, a Republican from Cherry Valley, characterized the diversion of funds as a, quote, legal loophole. The amendment limits money raised from transportation-related activities, like the motor fuel tax, to being spent only for transportation-related purposes. Quote, when we talk to the public and we sit down and we talk to a group of people and have to say they're taking $800 million of major roads and bridges they're supposed to get done out there in central and northern Illinois, that was taken and shifted over to Chicago. So your project's now being pushed back a year or two, or three. Then they get very angry, Siverson said. Vilivalam pointed out that the expenditure on transit is explicitly allowed in the text of the Constitution. Rezin is hoping the uproar over road funding will create unity among downstate politicians as they seek legislative solutions. Downstate needs to be made whole, Rezin said. We need to be made whole because we have crumbling roads and bridges. And with that, I'll conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.